Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. The following is an article from the March-April 2025 edition of National Geographic History Magazine. The title of today's article is Paul of Tarsus, the Traveling Apostle, by Angel Nato. A vision on the road to Damascus turned this zealous persecutor of Christians into an apostle who did more than any other to spread the new religion to every corner of the Roman Empire. Saul Paul, better known as Paul of Tarsus, went from persecuting Christians to preaching the gospel. He is one of the most influential figures in the history of early Christianity. His origins, conversion, and the circumstances surrounding his preaching gave him a unique profile and made him a point of reference for the first Christian communities as they were established and spread after the death of Jesus. Paul had a complicated trajectory to get to the position of respected apostle. He was born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia in southern Anatolia, into a Hellenized Jewish family. The inhabitants of Tarsus had enjoyed the privileges of Roman citizenship since the time of Mark Antony, in the middle of the 1st century BC. This explains why Paul had a Roman name, consisting of a first name, praenomen, Saul, and a last name, cognomen, Paul. It was the cognomen Paul that he would later use to sign his letters. Nevertheless, his family must have been relatively humble, because Paul had learned the trade of tent making, which he continued to practice even after becoming a Christian apostle. This knowledge might have been a factor in allowing him to undertake such long missionary journeys. As he traveled around the Roman Empire, sometimes for years at a time, Paul would carry cloth with him and pitch a tent when needed. Young Saul probably moved to Jerusalem while still a boy to complete his religious training under the rabbi Gamaliel I, a prominent member of the Sanhedrin, the governing council of the Jews. Later, Saul was associated with the Pharisees, one of the two main Jewish parties. Unlike the more conservative Sadducees, which placed the written law of the Torah above all else, the Pharisees championed oral traditions and evolving interpretations. Despite his more liberal readings of Jewish theology relative to the Sadducees, Paul was an Orthodox Jew who utterly rejected the emerging movement around Jesus of Nazareth. After Jesus died by crucifixion in the year AD 30 or 33, his followers kept faith that the Messiah would soon be resurrected and return to usher in the end of the world. Saul reproached these Christians for not observing the Mosaic law and for associating with non-Jews, whom he regarded as idol worshippers. These early followers of Jesus were mostly Jews themselves and participated in synagogue life, and Saul considered it his duty to identify them and call for their arrest and punishment. He is presented initially as a ruthless persecutor of Christians. In the New Testament book of Acts, the future apostle is mentioned for the first time in connection with the death of Stephen, a young follower of Jesus and the first Christian martyr. After an argument with some Jews, Stephen is arrested for blasphemy and tried by the Sanhedrin. He is condemned to death by stoning. Acts records that Saul approved of the sentence. In the persecutions that followed, Saul is zealous in searching houses and dragging out any Christians he found. But Saul's anti-Christian zeal would radically change soon afterward. While on his way to the Syrian city of Damascus, he is suddenly thrown to the ground and experiences a revelation. He sees a bright light shining down on him from heaven and hears a voice saying, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" The voice, identifying itself as that of Jesus, urges him to enter Damascus and do as he is ordered. After the vision, Saul is left blind. He arrives in Damascus and meets a Christian named Ananias, himself told by Jesus in a vision, to visit Saul. Ananias lays his hands on Saul, curing his blindness, as something like scales fell from Saul's eye, from Acts chapter 9, verse 18. Saul had been blind for 3 days, the same length of time believed to have elapsed between the death and resurrection of Jesus. After recovering his sight, Saul was baptized into the Christian community and began to go by the name Paul. The fervor with which he had once renounced Jesus' teaching would now be used to spread the gospel. Paul's dramatic conversion was important because it justified the central role that Paul would have in the spread of Christianity. Strictly speaking, Paul didn't fulfill the requirements to be considered an apostle, since he wasn't one of the disciples who followed Jesus from his baptism to his resurrection and ascension to heaven. Paul, however, defended his position in his letters, insisting that those who had a vision of the resurrected Jesus, like the one he experienced on the road to Damascus, were indeed apostles called forth by God. After his conversion, and for almost 30 years until his death around AD 64 to 67, Paul devoted himself tirelessly to Christian teaching. He made 4 great missionary journeys, covering a large swath of the Roman Empire. His aim was always to spread the Christian message and support the first groups of Christians who were establishing themselves in key locations. Paul's teaching was disseminated through a series of letters addressed to these new Christian churches that had expanded across the Roman Empire, to Greece, Ephesus, and beyond. Through these letters, which later formed part of the New Testament, he set out the basic precepts of Christian doctrine and instructions for how the faithful in these places should live. What set Paul apart from most of the early followers of Jesus was his firm commitment to spreading the Christian message to everyone, not only Jewish people. Paul opposed the members of the early church in Jerusalem who demanded that non-Jews be circumcised as a sign of their acceptance of the covenant between God and Abraham. In Paul's view, the Jewish law had been superseded by the new faith in Jesus Christ. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus, he declared in a passage of his letter to the Galatians. Although in his missions Paul did convert some Jews, most of his new proselytes were non-Jews. During his second and third journeys, Paul visited various cities in Asia Minor and continental Greece that had a long history of pagan culture. Ephesus, Thessalonica, and Athens were among them. There he preached the Christian message with notable success. In Thessalonica, he persuaded some of the locals to abandon the gods of the Greco-Roman pantheon, idols as he saw them, and instead serve the living and true God and to wait for his Son, Jesus. That's a quote from Thessalonians. Chapter 17 of Acts recounts Paul's long stay in Athens, the very heart of ancient Greek culture. Paul is troubled to see that the city is full of idols, so as well as going to the synagogue to argue with both Jews and Greeks, he goes to the marketplace to speak with Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. These philosophers debate with him, with some saying, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. The most outstanding episode of Paul's stay in Athens took place on the Areopagus, a hill near the Acropolis where an important court was located. In this symbolic location, Paul delivered a speech in which he emphasized the unique and exclusive nature of the Christian God and the resurrection of the dead. Although many rejected him, Paul succeeded in convincing some of those present, including an important member of the Areopagus called Dionysius, who would later become one of the first bishops of the city of Athens, and a woman named Damaris. These non-Jews were just some of the many who converted after hearing Paul preach. After Athens, Paul went to Corinth, where he stayed for a year and a half with a Jewish couple who were followers of Jesus and, like him, tent makers by profession. While there, every Sabbath he reasoned in the synagogue, trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. Then he moved into a house adjoining the synagogue in Corinth. Thanks to Paul's preaching, The synagogue leader and his entire household believed in the Lord, and many of the Corinthians who heard Paul believed and were baptized. Other Jews, however, complained about Paul to the proconsul, or governor, of the province of Achaia, but no action was taken against him, and he was free to leave. Paul's letter suggests that one of his main tasks was to resolve ethical or practical doubts as they arose within the Christian communities. In most cases, Paul tried to find a balance between the new teachings of Christianity and the established customs. This may explain the stance he took on the position of women in society. In broad terms, Paul taught that Christians should view men and women as equals, as evident in his letter to the Galatians. Nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Jesus Christ. But in practice, he held a highly conservative position. In his first letter to the church in Corinth, Paul urged, "Women should remain silent in the churches. They are not allowed to speak, but must be in submission, as the law says. If they want to inquire about something, they should ask their own husbands at home, for it is disgraceful for a woman to speak in the church." Some scholars argue that Paul's restrictions were intended to prevent women from teaching or asking questions only in public services, as custom at the time did not permit women to have authority over their husbands. Given that a few chapters earlier in 1 Corinthians, where Paul explains how women should pray and prophesy, some scholars believe that he did not intend to silence women entirely. Paul called Euodia and Syntyche his co-workers in the cause of the gospel, and Junia, who was in prison with him, outstanding among the apostles. In Romans 16, he greets several women who work hard in the Lord. Although some still debate the meaning of these verses, we know many women worked alongside Paul in spreading the gospel. Paul also pronounced how those in new Christian communities should manage their sexual relations. He lauded chastity, but considered marriage a useful defense against lasciviousness and the temptations of Satan. While saying that ideally the unmarried and widows should stay single and abstain from all sexual activity, he added the caveat, "If they cannot control themselves, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion." In this way, Paul integrated the most important values of the Christian message into the established social structures. Biblical accounts and most other sources record Paul's fourth and final missionary journey to Rome. Although Acts doesn't include details of how he died, it is believed that he was martyred, a victim of Roman authorities who were persecuting Christians for refusing to worship their gods and unjustifiably blaming them for the great fire of Rome. Acts of Paul, an apocryphal text from the mid-2nd century, records that he is beheaded by order of Emperor Nero. According to this account, when Paul's head is struck off, milk instead of blood flows from his neck. Then Paul is resurrected the next day and ascends to heaven, just as his teacher Jesus did. Another account links Paul's martyrdom to that of the Apostle Peter, a tradition based on the close relationship between the two. In a 5th century apocryphal text called Acts of Peter and Paul, Nero is advised about the fate of the two apostles who were imprisoned together. It is just that Paul's head should be cut off and that Peter should be raised on a cross. This account also describes how a group of Christians from the east tried to collect Paul's relics but was stopped from taking them out of the city by an earthquake. Paul's body remained in Rome and he was buried in the Ostian Way. Today, the site is marked by the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls. The original building dates to the time of Emperor Constantine I, who granted religious tolerance and freedom of worship to Christians. As the apostle to the Gentiles, Paul helped turn the Roman Empire into a center of Christianity. If you want to learn more about AIRS LA and the types of programs we offer, follow us by clicking on any of the social media links at the top of our web pages. If you like what you see or hear, please click the like button. That brings us to the end of today's article, Paul of Tarsus, the Traveling Apostle. I'm Jim Briscoe. Thank you for listening.